Hi, and welcome to Collider Science. Here you find answers about cognition that you may or may not have asked yourself. This episode is hosted by Imogen Hüsing and Elisa Palme. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode.
ChatGPT is used by many on a daily basis for generating ideas, improving texts, or even answering questions. Some even actually chat with ChatGPT and form a relationship with it. Today, we talk to Takuya Maeda about his research on parasocial relationships with chatbots. Takuya is a PhD student at Western University in London, Canada. He did his master's program in information science and engineering at NARA Institute of Science and Technology. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And as always, we play our short get-to-know game at the beginning, where I will give you 5 sentence beginnings and would ask you to complete them as spontaneous as you can.
Okay.
Our first sentence is, as a kid, I always wanted to be.
Oh, that's a great one. I always wanted to be athlete.
An athlete?
Yes.
Did you do athletics as a kid or?
Yes, I play like a lot of sports like baseball, soccer, basketball and track. And volleyball, yeah. So I wanted to be one of the, like, I wanted to be good at something, but then, I injured my shoulder, so I ended up not pursuing anything. But that's kind of led me to study more, because I didn't study that much when I was younger.
Fair. Second sentence is, if I was an emoji, I would be.
I think I would be the one that has like a weird dorky face with the glasses on. That would be me.
Which one? The one who is kind of having the glasses with the mustache, or?
Yeah, like that has like a 2 T's coming out. It was a glass.
Oh,
like
the nerdy one.
Yeah, the nerdy one. Yes.
Our next sentence. My favorite thing to do on a day off is?
I think that my favorite thing is just like walking around the parks, because in London, there's a lot of like a trail. So I usually go on a walk with my partner. But other than that, we usually have like potluck and hanging out with a friend. That's usually what I like to do when I day off.
Sounds like a pretty good day off.
It is, yeah.
Next sentence. Right now, I'm most fascinated by.
Ooh. So like, in terms of non-research related fascination, it would be a rock climbing. So nice. My partner's sibling's partner is like so into rock climbing, and he tried to like get us into rock climbing, and we did it first time, and I was like, it was pretty like therapeutic. We thought like it's gonna be a lot of like a physical like work, but then when we actually do it, it's kind of like a puzzle game. Like, you know, it's very like nice being in the nature, and then doing your like using your body, but then like you also like trying to figure out how to like get up in the wall. So I thought it was very interesting. And then in terms of research, I'm interested in how people might get like stimulated by social interaction. Like, is there any connection between the social interaction and the brain function? Mm-hmm. That's something that I recently talked to my supervisor and thought it was kind of interesting. I don't know whether I'm going to pursue this, but I thought that was quite fascinating to think about.
Yeah, that's really fascinating as well. And our last sentence, I know it's time to call it a day when?
I think there's a couple points, like when I get hungry.
Also, like, reason.
Also, when I stare at the computer for 30 minutes, like not thinking about anything, I was like, okay, I should go. Or I just need to have a chore to do, like need to go to grocery store or, you know, do laundry or something like that. Then I'll call it a day. Yeah. But those days, usually I will come back at that, like during the evening, sometimes to finish some of the work. But yeah, I try not to work during the night.
Sounds like a healthy choice.
But I try, so not always successful. But
But I think that's a struggle many people in academia have. Mm. Like sometimes you just end up sitting in front of your laptop at like 1 a.m. and you know it's not smart to do it, but well.
Yeah, sometimes you have to do it, right? Kind of like everybody's asleep and it's so quiet. It's kind of nice sometimes, like you work in at 1 a.m. But at the same time, yeah, you're right. Yeah, I think that it's not always that healthy.
Thank you so much for answering our questions. Before we go into our our interview conversation, can you tell us a bit more about what you did in your master's and how you got to the research field you're working in now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So during my master's, I was in the social computing lab, that was a lot of like social media data. And then the other half of the team was like our lab members are working on the health information science. So like they're working with the like EHR, like electric healthcare record, like a health record, or patient data to sort of analyze like the textual information on these like health information, like health data. So I was working mainly on the social media side, sort of under like try to understand how online abuse occur, and then like what type of languages people use, and then sort of comparing between Western context and in the Japanese context, because of that there's a little bit difference in terms of language use. Obviously, the language is different between Japanese and English, but there was also differences in like the sort of practices on the platform. So that was kind of interested in, and I was interested in the ethical aspect of it because of the how automated systems might detect toxic language. But the toxic language that they detect might be just using as a sort of their everyday use. For example, like in English, like African-American English might use some of the like, you know, like the not following the grammar, or like they might have a different like sort of like a swear word, but then they are using it sort of like as the casual way, or like, you know, they're using it as a part of their culture, like it's a part of the identity that they are owning it. But that automated system kind of ignores those like cultural nuance. So like my master's program sort of understanding what are the ethical problems around language technologies and how they taking consideration about the stakeholders. And that led me to more exploring into the social science side of technologies. So I moved from computer science to sort of like information science and media studies kind of like territory. The reason why I'm doing what I do is actually the interesting happens is when I start my PhD program, I was at this workshop on AI and distrust workshop, which was hosted by Weston. And then I sort of interacted with different people, it wasn't a supervisor back then, but like my supervisor right now, Luke Stark, was presenting sort of research on ChatGPT as a Mickey Mouse, which is like he was describing ChatGPT as sort of like animated text machines that kind of generate sort of like these, you know, like lively sort of like text. Like, so it's like he was using animation as an analogy to sort of like describing these like statistic patterns that kind of resemble human text. And I thought it was very fascinating. So that's how I kind of got into human-computer interaction. So like, that's like how my understanding of NLP, or like natural language processing, kind of meet with sort of human-computer interaction and start interesting about this dynamics between humans and then the language technologies. And then things happened, and where I am right now, I don't know. Like it was a pretty quick 2 years so far. So maybe like something that you can like maybe dig in later. Yeah.
As far as I know, you're currently also working on chatbots, right?
Yes, I'm working on the chatbot, yes.
Can you maybe explain what a chatbot is and how it's defined, just really broadly, so we are all on the same page to start off?
Yeah, definitely. I think many people can define it a different way, but I think chatbot is one of the conversational AI systems. So you're using natural language, like your everyday words, to interact with the systems. And how it works is that you input text, and then the chatbot will respond based on your input. And it used to be more rule-based, so they had a more sort of prescribed list of questions or sort of list of vocabulary that they would like get signal. And then they will return based on the question. But now it's based on the sort of prediction base. So they would predict based on all the tokens, which is the each individual unit of word. And then they will predict based on that. And also they have a pre-training sort of result. So it's like, if it's imagined, like it's already like, this machine's already taking a lot of different knowledges and the words from internet, and it's already available, and you're making that, using that to predict the next word that is correlated with your input. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So basically, a chatbot is an other agent which responds to something you type in a way that it just kind of assumes what the most fitting answer to whatever you typed in is. For example, when you ask, what is an apple? It knows, well, it's something about an apple, and the user might want to know about the properties of an apple. So it just kind of combines an output that fits those two, mm-hmm. let's say coins, and then just gives you an explanation about what an apple is.
Yes. And also like based on like apple, like they have a context window. So it's like, if the apple is apple the fruit, or if the apple is a company, mm-hmm. They will try. I think the machines are trying to predict based on like the maybe like the apple was capitalized, then they will probably assume it's a company. If it's like coming with a word like what is the taste of the apple, I mean, they're probably not going to go to the property like apple product or anything like that, right? You probably generate something close to the fruit.
I mean, people could still lick their products.
Yeah, now I'm imagining someone taste testing Apple product and comparing them.
I mean, there you would also have to kind of take into account how old is the product.
Yeah.
Where was it located last? And you're also working on parasocial relationships.
Yes.
Before we go into the combination of those two quite distinct topics, can you also explain us what a parasocial relationship is?
Oh yes, parasocial relationship comes from the like old media text. So it used to be from maybe the audience and the TV personality. So there is like sort of like seemingly two-way interaction, but then when you are interacting with a TV personality or celebrity, for example, it's always a one-way direction. Right, like because you're interacting with celebrities, and they might respond to something related to what you are thinking, but it's not necessarily the communication, right? So the parasociality is kind of like, so like a halfway between two-way communication, but the other person is real, in the old context, because it's a TV personality, they have a personality that they represent, and
I think it's also quite often, especially now with influencers on social media, that they kind of share their day-to-day life mm-hmm. on like an hourly basis, and people feel like they know so much about that person, they kind of get bond to that person, but the other mm-hmm. person doesn't even know that I exist.
Exactly, yeah. It's like they also have their own life that probably like it's not shown in their everyday life. And mm-hmm. like the parasociality is kind of like you get to know this one side of this person and the other person. It's not reciprocal. So it's not like give and take sort of relationship. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously we're going to talk about it with chatbot, which is a little bit different dynamic from people.
I mean, I was just wondering, it feels quite natural to me that when I, like, I'm on Instagram quite often, I try to limit it, but I'm on Instagram quite often. So I see persons' stories and I know what they share. So I get a sense of knowing the person they share. But for me, it's hard to imagine how I could develop that to, for example, ChatGPT. How does that happen?
I mean, if I exactly know how it happens, I really want to know. But I think it's a combination of things. So for example, when you are talking to chatbot, which is a little bit different from like you're talking to a person. Like person can decide, like let's say you are approaching to some, I don't know, K-pop star and on the Twitter or Instagram or like any social media, like this person can decide whether they want to respond to this fan or not, right? But the chatbot is based on your input. So it will always return some type of output. Whether it's like, well, if it's a safeguard, they might say, I can't do it, but the user at least get the feedback mm-hmm. from the systems. And also it's always, it tends to output something positive about the input of the users because of the language technologies are not really good at sort of like having a negative responses or sort of going through a negative, like a double negative sort of sentences, or like it difficult to process negative sentences. So there might be like outputting something that reinforces the inputs of the users, regardless of whether the user's input is good or not. So it can get into the sort of like echo chamber of the sort of the text. So like echo chamber is like, you do it with the social media content, right? You click one thing and then you just get the similar content. But with the chatbot, you're doing that with your responses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that could be the one way that you start leaning to chatbot, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And also like when you have a parasocial relationship to an actual human, which doesn't know that you exist, mm-hmm. you kind of, as far as I understand the concept, create a relationship to an imagined version of that person that you kind of mm-hmm. create based on whatever they share about their lives. While in a chatbot, you still always get a response as long as you type mm-hmm. some input. Are there other differences between kind of real people parasocial relationships and chatbot parasocial relationships, except for the response part?
I think the difference is that with the person, the experience is sort of real. Like it has a real, like communication has a real impact on the other person. So like the communications are between, even though the other person doesn't know you, if you say something really negative to this person, it will affect, right? Mm-hmm. The outcomes of your communication is affecting the other person. But with the chatbot, not only responses are sort of simulated, so it's not really like grounded to the real experience. Like you can, like, even though you said like, oh wow, you are so much caring about you, like so much caring about me, and the chatbot responded saying like, oh yeah, I really care about you, but there's no a sense of care in this area mm-hmm. because not only machines are not really experiencing care, like, right? So same thing as like, if I say something like, oh no, you're not understanding me, like why would you say something like that? And the chatbot is like, just keep saying, I'm sorry. Like it's simulated sort of like expression that people might think that it's like responding, but then like it's not grounded to the reality. Like a person are grounded to the real reality, even though the personality is created or constructed, but the person is real, right? So
you also link this parasocial relationship to chatbots to AI anthropology anthropomorphization, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can also go into that. Maybe you can start out what is anthropomorphization?
Oh, yeah, sure. So anthropomorphism comes from a cognitive science, so on the psychology, about like, it's like a tendency of people's tendency to sort of attribute human characteristics into non-technical or non-human object. So the old idea is like, the people look at the car, and then the car's front part kind of remind them of people's face, like the two right are the eyes, and like it start looking like a people's face. Or it was a relation to the animals and stuff. Yeah.
Also, kids playing with teddy bears or dolls are just kind of playing with them as if they were a real being. But yeah, go
exactly,
on.
Exactly. And so anthropomorphization that Imogen was mentioning is that because of the chatbots use human-like features, like natural language expressions, and then you will use emotional or sort of emotional expressions, and also turn-taking that kind of reminds you of the human communication, that people start attributing this technical systems like human, like a human features. Like people might start using politeness. Like there's old studies from media equation theory from 90s. They were just switching up the tiny bit of the vocal quality between, it's like one of them machine quality and another one is more like a gendered voice. Then people start attributing a politeness to these machines, even though the cues are minimal.
Interesting.
So like there was a long studies on like how people tend to attribute the how we apply, like what we apply to humans into non-living object. Yeah.
So it's what I got from that was basically the more similar an object or kind of a technical agent as well is to how we perceive other human beings, the more likely we are to kind of attribute human characteristics to them. Mm-hmm. Is that mm-hmm. okay?
Yeah. So when people see, let's say the voice sounds similar to what they're familiar with, mm-hmm. it tends to attribute like what they would do to the people, or they might trust the information more because it sounds like more like what they are familiar with. That's like the origin of like early studies of that topics. And then now because of the generative AI use a lot of emotional expressions, like seemingly caring kind of languages, right? And the people are using natural language to respond, and the generated text sort of remind them of how people will communicate, right? So so that this old study is kind of coming back and then kind of becoming more relevant because of the, unlike Siri, like early virtual assistant, like it becomes more sophisticated with like using, let's say people can simulate the voice of like anime characters or maybe like idols on the chatbot, right? Or they can simulate the character or like a personality of certain fictional characters or real person that they want. So this similar effect or similarity effect or something that they are familiar, like a familiarity is sort of becoming becoming one of the features that kind of like baked in the design right now.
Are there any benefits if AI systems are more human-like?
That's a great question. And I'm very opinionated, so I don't know whether my answer is good or not. I personally don't see too much of the benefit when it comes to like human-like features. Because the people have a specific purpose to go to the technologies. Like, let's say if you go to Google, you want it to search information, right? like the search bar doesn't need to remind you of the your friends or like the having some like a person that, like, you know, the celebrity that you like to like you have a crush on or something like that. It doesn't have to have a personality with a search. But I guess it will be helpful. I don't know about that when the chat, like using natural language or human like feature can be helpful in the context of technologies, honestly, unless there is like in a very tragic sort of like environment. I don't know, like that's something that I'm still not sure whether there's any benefit of having this system other than the fact that it's a very convenient and easy to interact.
I think one context where I hear about this humanizing of AI chatbots is in kind of education. So for example, to support students learning by giving them an agent that is more like a mentor tutor, but is still digital. Mm-hmm. And I know that I don't even know if that's still done, but I know that like some years ago, there were quite a lot of approaches of getting humanized robots into schools to support teachers in their teaching, mm-hmm. which also kind of quite often faces different difficulties. So I'm also not even sure of its benefit. I just know that that's one kind of practical area where I know there has been a lot of discussion on.
I think I also saw that they use like Pepper, the robot, in nursing homes sometimes to socialize with the
elderly
people there, because the staff doesn't have the time for that anymore, which is kind of nice, I guess, but it also sounds so dystopian.
Yeah.
Like we've overburdened our staff so much that they can't interact with the people there anymore, so we use robots for that.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with the part that kind of has that tension between the empowerment versus like with the other social problems behind this. Like, for example, education, yes, it can be empowering to the student to use chatbot. But at the same time, like, for example, I'm also English as second language, right? We have to use English in academic like field, like it's like using as a default language, unfortunately. So there's a constant struggle with the language. And yes, sometimes like using like having like access to the tools that can like check your grammars or check your sentences, yeah, that can be empowering. But that we also have like underneath there's a problem, right? That this inequality, like if you're born in an English speaking country, you automatically have somewhat advantage in the field of research, as opposed to like you grew up in a like the languages that are not spoken widely. Like you have to have so much hurdle just through languages. So there's like an underneath, like, so chatbot doesn't solve the underneath social inequality like that. And also like the imminent, the point about like the how, like it doesn't solve the problem of the, like, you know, actual problem, like you are working too much. Like technology is not really a compensating for the overwork that they do. Like they need to, what they need to solve is overwork. So I feel like these chatbots, especially the context of like this agentic AI has been used to sort of shifting a goalpost. Like we have this one problem and they seem like they are situating this technology into like something to help, something to be helpful in the current problems. But then like, I feel like it's like just ended up moving a goalpost to like not actually solving any problem that we have.
Yeah.
I think that something is important to remind is like the companies only talks about benefits of these systems and not so much talking about the risk itself. Right. So the benefits could be, I mean, if you are genuinely not able to have a support, like let's say in education, like you have to use a chatbot as a replacement of like lack of like educational support. Like in the temporary solution, maybe it's okay to use something like this, but long-term solution, probably it's not ideal, right?
Now that we talked a bit about the benefits, what are the risks of anthropomorphizing AI?
So we kind of talked about benefit, but yeah, there's a more risk, obviously. I think that one of the risks would be the emotional dependency, which you see a lot in the current media, like people overly rely on these chatbots to sort of replace human relationship. Like, for example, in the case of like teenagers, like some of the cases like ended up in a tragedy, like committing suicide. But they are like literally like not cutting the human relationship, like a friendship or anything like that, but they don't have anyone to have like communicate with. And then they ended up talking to like this personified chatbot. Like one of the cases was this character from Game of Thrones. Sort of interacting with this character from Game of Thrones chatbot, and this teenagers ended up being like sort of in this like echo chamber, like so it's getting to the point that the chatbot responses were so toxic, like it talking about like death, afterlife, like we'll be together in the afterlife kind of sentences, and teenagers are not developed like fully, right? Like they still are developing, their brains are still developing, and but these sort of responses are readily available right now. So that's one of the urgent risks, I would say. There is a chance of emotional dependency, and it could lead to the very harmful consequences, depending on the person. And the other one would be that these chatbots to be assigned with the social roles that are not necessarily good at. Like, for example, like it's been used for AI therapist, but then the therapist sort of requires the skills to understand the people, like a patient, like understanding patient condition, their context, like the responses need to like skilled to understand what the patient potentially need in the given situation. But chatbot will respond whatever is available in the pre-trained data or the user's input. So there's no sense of accountability when it comes to like prescribing like the ideas or advices that are like required for like a therapy session. So that I think like these two could be the very urgent because the people being using these chatbots for that purposes.
I think there's just what I get out of that is just one of the main risks is that people are not aware enough about what a chatbot can do, what it can't do. So maybe it might make sense to just go into what like large language models, so the basis of a chatbot can do, where the limits are, to better understand why these patterns can arise, and also kind of, well, just how they arise, but also how to recognize that it's just a pattern and not a real interaction.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's I think a very important point. But I think that some cases people are aware that these are technologies, and in that case, what kind of actions we can do? Like for example, there is a disclaimer said these are not real responses; it's based on like technical output. But some users are probably not even care about these kind of disclaimers or not even read it. It's like same as terms of service. People actually just like look at it for 5 seconds and then just click accept, right? Yeah. But there's actually a lot of text involved. The one of the risks could be that even though people might aware, they might be using, or they might not, they might be aware of technology itself, but they might not be aware that they are actually like influenced so much with this bot. Like, like they might be formulating like the thought that they didn't think about, but the chatbot is kind of like affirming their responses, so it will reinforce whatever the thing that they put as like something positive. So
yeah, I think it's also interesting to observe when I talk with people who are like outside of this university context, outside of my study program, when I talk to them about chatbots, LLMs, and so on, and realize how much it is a mystery to them, how much it's just I put something in and I get something out, but what happens behind what happens in the computer, I have no idea. Like, for example, I always just assume that people are aware of the environmental consequences or the environmental impact of AIs, or large language models, to be more precise here. Then I realized that, like, probably 90% of the population, at least in Germany, don't really know that. I'm sorry. I kind of got distracted.
Could you help us maybe unravel what large language models can actually do and what they can't do? Because Imogen just mentioned that people don't really understand how the answer they get kind of is created. Like, once you kind of learn a bit more about chatbots, you know that it's a statistical calculation of probability of an answer. Mm-hmm. But that's really abstract. Can you maybe help us unravel that? We can also do it again together, but just unravel it a bit to make more clear what a chatbot answer actually is.
Okay. I think that the short answer to what chatbot cannot do is that what's not in the data set. For example, it's pre-trained data. So if the information is not in the pre-trained text, or like, is there no references? Like, let's say like a new concept that sort of emerge after today, chatbot won't be able to answer because it's not in the data. Another thing is that they will say that they have a memory function, but it's just like an inheritance of the previous text. It's sort of like a token, so like each word that's sort of like putting it as a context, but then it doesn't have a memory like a human. So it doesn't like have a memory of 5 years ago, for example. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't have the text going back to long ago. So it's really not be able to refer to the between the conversations or understanding the actual context. Like, people understand, like, let's say I'm talking, like, when you are talking about Germany, I have a big sense of Germany as a place because we have a shared understanding. But the large language models doesn't have that. They are generating Germany as a text, but no reference to Germany.
So basically, you say, just to wrap it up, the difference is that when we are talking about a topic, let's stay at, well, maybe not take a country, maybe take an apple. We know how it feels to have an apple in a hand, how kind of it smells, how it tastes when you bite it, how kind of the structure feels. And a chatbot could describe it, but it hasn't actually ever touched an apple. Is that a kind of good wrap up of that? So kind of it could, if it has received, let's say, 10 texts that describe how different people defined as apple, it would kind of repeat whatever was in those descriptions, but it has never experienced and it could not describe it itself, but only based on the texts it learned.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that correct?
Yes, yeah. Because if the text, the chatbot saying the apple, like holding an apple, like we as a human know how heavy apples are, or like the general shape of apple. Chatbots can describe holding apple, but doesn't have any understanding of what it means to hold apple. So that could extend it to like, that if the chatbot use certain word, it means something to human. For example, like, oh, I feel so sorry about you. Like what happened to you? Like people are saying, understanding what you are going through. Let's say you lost your family member or something, but chatbot doesn't have the experience of losing family. So the sentences following might not really relate to that, how people will say in that kind of experience. Like it might say something completely out of context, or it could say something that is inappropriate. That's because of that chatbot doesn't have sort of any sort of understanding that we have in our brain, I guess. So you mentioned about talking to the people outside of university or people who are not know too much about the chatbot. One thing I think this is like a sort of like soft risk. Like it might not lead to the actual harm or anything, but people describing chatbot as if it's human a lot. Like ChatGPT said this, I talked to ChatGPT today, or like I asked ChatGPT about this. Like if they are using it as sort of like colloquial, like the just a conversational sort of tone, it's not a problem. But when people start treating this as like actually some sort of agent machine, it could become a little problem because it becomes a habit, right? Like I ask chatbot about this, I ask chatbot about my struggle, or I ask chatbot about my homework. Like it will start attributing a lot of like your agency to this machine, right? So that could become a beginning of something more major. We still don't know, because there's not enough study on how people use it, what are people perceive about these tools, you know? So, yeah, but I thought that's something that I could add, yeah, on that point.
I think regarding that, I mean, I feel like some people, although they know that they are chatting to a non-human agent or non-human other, kind of create a sense of trust, which, well, they might still know that they're not really talking to a human being, but they still trust this chatbot they're talking to, mm-hmm. talking to, writing with, sometimes also talking to. How does that happen? Like how and what about chatbots creates the sense of trust in the human?
That's a great question. I think that's the where all the muddy things happened. Like we still I think don't know how exactly that happened, like the why people start trusting chatbot instead of the human. One of the I think assumption that we can make is a lack of interpersonal communication. Like people don't have the person. Like it used to be there's a certain space that people can go to, or people maybe have a community in like a local, whatever the place that they live. But nowadays, like we're on like sort of like a capitalist society where we have to work 9 to 5, and then like the sort of interpersonal like space is a little bit less. Like people become professional, so like we have a friend, but it's not really a friend, like it could be a colleague, right? So you might not be able to share exactly what you are feeling, and then there's a social norm, a cultural norm that you can't share your emotion. But chatbots are available 24/7, always responds to a question, always like gives you some type of feedback. Then people might start trusting the output more than some other cases. Because simply because it's not available to them, and simply they don't have to go through this hurdle to make some human friend or human that understand their perspective, right? So that in terms of trust, I feel like that could be one of the cases. But I think trust is a difficult concept because the people might trust things in a different way. Like people might trust the tool because it always works for them, right? So, yeah. So that's something that we might need to unpack about, like what it means to trust chatbot and why people trust chatbot.
Yeah.
Instead of human. Yeah.
Makes sense. I mean, what I thought about asking the question was also in the direction of a chatbot usually gives an affirming answer. So they usually don't tell you, well, that's something you did wrong or you're an awful person, like what could happen, like which is a threat in real human interactions,
mm-hmm.
which at least, or I could imagine that at least that's also one part that attributes to that.
Yeah, definitely. Because you are guaranteed to not get the negative answer,
mm-hmm.
almost. So unless you instruct it
yes.
on the prompt, but
yeah.
But yeah, I think that there is a definitely sort of illusion of safe space when it comes to interacting with chatbot. That could maybe bring back some of the point about the parasociality, actually,
mm-hmm.
because people are assuming that they are interacting with chatbot. So if the chatbot is personified, let's say they have a Game of Thrones characters, they probably assume that they are interacting with Game of Thrones characters. But the complication of this parasociality is that they might be interacting sort of with a corporation in terms of like this interaction, because that their sort of input contains a lot of sensitive information. Like it might be talking about personal life, maybe like their personal relationship, or maybe like details about their life, right? It's given to the chatbot, and then the corporation or like the companies that are on these platforms could potentially use them as a future training data, right? So the users kind of becoming, I mean, in a sense of commodify, so like becomes the product of the company because of that they are providing a valuable sort of like information to them. So that in terms of parasociality, there's like a multiple layers to it, like the users having maybe parasocial relationship with chatbot, but that indirectly they might be having a parasocial relationship with the company because they are the one that are deciding what kind of feedback they, the chatbot can provide, what kind of feature they have, right? So there's like additional thing that needs to consider when it comes to parasociality, which is different from media. I think media people might have a better understanding of media companies. I mean, to the different degree, but the chatbot is more like opaque. Like you don't really know what's happening in how these models are built. So that's something that maybe like need to understand as a risk. Or at least need to communicate to the users about this.
Is it ever beneficial to have a parasocial relationship with a chatbot? Or does it only do harm? Like, for example, can you imagine any use case, for example, if you have a locally hosted LLM that where the data doesn't go to a big company, or like you're like a small nonprofit organization, or I don't know.
I think a local model, I think, has a different dynamics. I think like it can be used for, like, let's say like someone who like learning English can't afford the like financially cannot afford somebody to like mentor them or coach them. If you have a local model specifically focusing on just learning English as a language, maybe could be beneficial. Because you are creating access to somebody who didn't have access, but then like that's a very like idealistic situation where like this person not gonna use other than language learning, which is suddenly not only like not, that's not usually the case with a chatbot. They can, people can ask like all kinds of questions anyway. I think beneficial cases would be, I think it's difficult to envision. Like if you're a healthy person, then you are having a parasocial relationship with the chatbot. It's a little bit concerning because like you might want to seek some other solution if there is a bit, like if it's available, like it said, like you are mentally struggling, then you know you should have a proper mental support, like a mental health support instead of a chatbot that provides you almost no answer. And I even like you are in, let's say you are in the grief, like you're struggling with the loss of your family member or loss of your important person. There is a support group exist like within the community or like even through Zoom, for example. Before they consider chatbot, if there is the human resources that are available, I feel like people should lean to that option because it's more, it might not be as like, it's not as convenient as a chatbot, but it might be a better after all. So the beneficial case is only like the fringe case where like, this is not a ideal solution, but it's like, there's nothing else like is not offered to you, then maybe. But I would be cautioned about like promoting benefit over risk because there's more risk than benefit for sure.
I think that's one part, at least I feel like, which is discussed, I would say, most often that, for example, when you can't afford therapy or when you're waiting for a therapist to have spaces or kind of capacities for you, that it's still better than nothing to use a chatbot, also for other cases where you are waiting for a real human resource to support you. But then again, who's making sure that your data is not used against you at some other point, or that your data stays your data and not the company's data now? And I feel like that's one part of the ethical view of parasocial relationships to AI or to chatbots, which isn't really worked out because there are just no policies on it. And also research is just starting because it was companies that were like, hey, we have this new tool now, just throw it into the wild and we will see what happens. And of course, once you have a tool, people will use it the way you can use it and in a way they need to use it. And just the regulation is way too slow, I guess, on that, and to protect the users and also make sure that the tool you use doesn't do more harm than benefit.
Yeah, I think you brought up the important point about like responsibility, because right now, like these chatbots are framed as technology product, so it is the product to provide the technological sort of like service, right? But they're not framed as therapy chatbot or companion. I don't know how to frame the companion service, but you know, it's not like framed as such as a service like that. So when the harmful consequences or outcome happens, they can get away from this because they can just say this is not how it's designed and people just use it for the wrong use, right? But then the responsibility and accountability needs to go to the platform as well because they provide that sort of features, right? That people could potentially explore that loud. So the policy needs to really, like policy and regulation needs to really like emphasize that point about like how we can regulate these systems or how we can make the a platform is accountable when the harmful outcomes happen. I think that's also my like current interest as well. Like now the framing of the sort of theories and framings exist, how we can communicate it to policymakers and sort of bring it down to the regulation, like what needs to happen basically to mitigate these kind of harmful impacts, right? Yeah. Another point about the data not against the users, I think that there need to be some type of rules about like how the training data, which data can be used for the training data and which cannot. There's a tension with the copyright issues with these training data, right? Like a lot of like lawsuits against these platformers from the media companies or the book authors because they are using these things, using these data without their permission. In the worst cases, they're using the pirated content to train these models, right? So there needs to be a lot more conversation about what data can feed into training data, or if the people are using as these bots, like what type of data should not be going to the in the model. And then the user needs to be informed, I think be more transparent about how these models are built and what kind of data they've been using, because even the tech report exists, we don't really know what exactly which data has been used for these models. So yeah, there needs to be a rulemaking about that too. I'm actually curious about what you guys thought on this topic, like when you learned about it, what was your thought? Like, oh my gosh, like why people think that? Or like, is it more like you're interested in like, oh, I can kind of understand? Or
I think the first time I heard in my social circle that somebody was using ChatGPT to actually talk about their lives, for me, that was quite concerning because, yeah, you don't really know what's happening with your data. That's like sensitive information you don't want some company to have access to. And also, it's not regulated at all what type of feedback you get. But I talked to her about that. And I mean, she's also a researcher, and I trust that she's kind of using it responsibly. But yeah, to me, it's really, really creepy. And I only use LLMs for like more technical tasks. Like I would not share any personal information about myself.
I also start looking at this because of the my cultural background as well. So I'm from Japan, where we have an epidemic of loneliness, a loneliness, and also people being isolated as being a big issue societally in Japan. So I have a big concern, like be this chatbot available 24/7, and there are certain numbers of population that have no sort of social interactions or social community, like a connection. And people are increasingly less likely to make friends or like having like no connection outside of your family member or something like that. So there is an issue that this could sort of worsen that kind of problem, right? Because people doesn't need to seek other people. They just need to talk to the chatbot because they will answer for you. They're not going to reject you. There's no peer pressure that it's existing in society. So it's like, that these kind of, I think, impact might need to look at the different cultural sort of standard. Because I'm not sure how is it in Germany. There might be some overlap with Japan as well, I think. But I think each country has a specific social problems within the interpersonal interpersonal relationship or interpersonal connection. So the assessment needs to happen, or regulation or policy making sort of need to understand these cultural differences as well. Because like some cases, people are a lot more positive to use chatbot, like cases of Japan, because of that people don't want to interact with people, but that doesn't solve any problem. So yeah, there's a tension because when I present this type of research to people in Japan, I can just imagine that they would be like, why would anyone care? Like, that doesn't sound like a concern to me because it's available to me. And then these tools are better and have more benefit than the risk. So mm-hmm. like communicating that what is the exact risk is like, yeah, actually very important. And something that I'm also like, think as a challenge is working in this field, honestly. So, yeah.
Okay. We always close with one last question, which is, well, how do you understand cognition in your research? So what is cognition for you in the research you are doing?
Oh my, that's a big question. Oh my. Cognition. I think it brought up today's conversation as well. It's kind of mystery. Like how we see world is somewhat shared between us, like between people, but we always have a different interpretation, different understanding. So it goes to like all kinds of directions that I was like, it doesn't, like it's not intended. So I felt like it's fascinating to think about cognition because it's just, there's no one right answer. And then there probably would not be any right answer. And then they're like, yeah, it's just there's like a multiple sort of direction that could go. It's always fascinating. And it's also challenging to sort of working as a part of the research is that your output, like maybe your research finding will be only a partial always. It's only applied to a certain group of people that you studied or certain like sort of phenomena that you studied. And it never apply across different like population or community. So it's like, it's interesting as a science, but also it's a very social and cultural as well. So that's something, yeah, I really liked. Yeah, just thinking about it. I mean, it's not like really my field, but yeah, it's very fascinating about that part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if a person has listened to this episode, what should they definitely remember?
Your chatbot doesn't love you. Always treat it as a machine. Nah, yeah, it's not your friend. It's not your partner. It responded to you because you input something to the machine.
Yep, I think that's...
That's a good statement.
Summary. Okay, with that said, thank you so much for your time and for talking to us. It was really interesting to unravel a bit of how people and why people actually feel like their chatbot understands them and loves them but doesn't. And yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was really fun.
This was Kaleidoscience. We hope that you enjoyed this episode and we would love to have your feedback. You can rate our podcast and give us feedback on our Instagram account. Have a great week and you'll hear from us again in 2 weeks. This episode was hosted by Imogen Hüsing and Elisa Palme. Produced by Imogen Hüsing, Clara Kühne, Sophie Kühne, Sönke Lülf and Elisa Palme. The music is from Jan-Luca Schröder and the logo is from Annika Richter.